Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. America has a complicated history with squatters. In the 1860s, President Lincoln actually encouraged people to occupy, quote, unclaimed lands out west, improve them for a couple years, build a house, and then apply for a deed of ownership. But that was about vacant lots. What happens to vacant houses? Modern squatting is a lot more complicated, and recently it's become a lot more political. Helped along by a law in Florida and a viral TikTok post from an undocumented immigrant now living in Columbus. Here to walk us through the law and the recent case is Columbus City Attorney Zach Klein. Welcome back to All Sides, Zach.
Thanks for having me back, Anna.
First off, what is squatting legally speaking?
So squatting legally speaking is when you don't have ownership or possession, whether it's through a lease or a contract, for being in a structure, whether that's occupied or not. And so somehow you enter that structure and somehow try to take and claim ownership or occupancy that is not yours.
And what sort of penalties can you face here in Columbus for doing this?
Well, you kind of have to walk through a scenario. If it's an occupied structure and say the family's away on vacation, you could be breaking into their home, which is a burglar. Burglary or breaking and entering, which is a felony. And then once you're in there, you could be trespassing. If it's an unoccupied structure, say a vacant house that's placarded by the city of Columbus, that could be trespassing and also violating the law of entering a vacant structure, which is a whole separate crime. In Ohio, we have a litany of crimes on the books that are enforced to prevent this sort of action from happening.
So when it comes to squatters and their potential rights or the rights they think they may have, there was a viral video that I referenced earlier by a Venezuelan citizen who was living illegally here in Columbus, where he was essentially telling people to come here and camp out in vacant homes. What was your initial reaction other than like, oh dear?
Well, my initial reaction was twofold. The first is, well, that's a violation of the law, and he's encouraging people to break the law. And the second is the type of folks that are following him on TikTok could be other undocumented immigrants, and is really putting a vulnerable population at risk for criminal prosecution if they would follow this misinformation that this, quote unquote, influencer was propagating online. I think it goes without saying, but don't believe everything you see on the internet, and certainly don't believe everything you see on social media.
Yeah. Senator J.D. Vance shared a video from Moreno, who shared this video, and it's getting a lot of play in conservative social media. Moreno actually said, here's an illegal alien advising his buddies on how to use the law to steal your home.
Well, Moreno should probably check out Ohio law before he tries to become a United States senator. I mean, the reality is it's in violation of Ohio law. It's enforced in the city of Columbus. We have the Columbus Division of Police show up and actually prosecute or arrest or summons people for prosecution for trespass, and my office prosecutes trespass. So as far as I'm concerned, like, this is not a concern or a legitimate thing in the city of Columbus.
So I want to be clear that the Venezuelan citizen also has the last name Moreno, no relation to Bernie Moreno, but he was arrested in Gahanna actually last week and is in jail in Geauga County for failure to report to Immigration and Customs Enforcement in a timely manner.
And that's what I was saying about the most vulnerable population maybe following this individual and thinking that they can mimic this conduct, which is a violation of the law. I think homeowners, property owners should rest assured in the city of Columbus that your property is safe and that what you're seeing propagated and pushed from a propaganda standpoint by social media, conservative media circles, is to me nothing shy of hysteria.
But the laws appear to be different in other states. New York City in particular has gone quite viral for this idea that you can claim some sort of tenancy right after as little as 30 days in a dwelling.
Well, in Ohio, it's 21 years. So we have quite a ramp up.
That's a difference.
For all the nerd lawyers like myself that are listening, you'll remember back in law school we learned about adverse possession. It's a tenet of common law that was brought from England to the United States when our country was founded, and it essentially says that if you do abandon a property, someone can move in, and if they live there open and notoriously, which means they're not hiding the secret that they're living there, and it's for 21 consecutive years, then it can be yours. So unless you're going on one heck of a vacation for 21 years, I think you have nothing to worry about.
That sounds like a case for a place that has been truly abandoned.
Yeah, and like that could be true, but again, when you meet the definition, you have to be there continuously. You have to basically claim it for yourself and no one contests it. And it has to be, like I said, consecutively for 21 years. And adverse possession is not a defense for criminal trespass. And like we actually had a recent case where someone tried to claim like, oh, this is mine. You know, the person abandoned the home for a short period of time, not 21 years. And the court said when the case was prosecuted, because again, this is not happening in Columbus. We're prosecuting these individuals and police are dealing with them. The court said adverse possession is not a defense and that you can be criminally prosecuted for entering someone else's property that's not yours.
Yeah, that was a case in February where the 10th District Court of Appeals here in Franklin County decided that it did not apply to this because of the breaking and entering charge.
Right.
So it sounds like overall, is squatting a problem in Columbus?
No.
I want to talk about a little bit of a twist, legally speaking, and that's what might happen if somebody legally enters your home and then refuses to leave. So with tenants, we'd call that an eviction process, and tenants right. do have certain rights, though. And I think this is kind of where things get confused, right? The difference between tenants' rights and squatter rights.
Well, tenants' rights are governed by a contract between a landlord and tenant. There's a whole section of the Ohio Revised Code that is decades long in the making and has been on the books for a long time that allows folks to rent out their place under the terms of a contract, a term of a lease. And then if that is violated or it expires, then there is a process through the court that's also in the landlord-tenant law that allows for eviction, allows for a law enforcement agency. It could be a division of police and or a sheriff, a county sheriff's office, after certain notice and due process to actually go in, remove your stuff from the premises, change the locks, and get you out. So there is a due process that exists in Ohio law that allows landowners who choose to rent out their place to deal with tenants who are no longer on the lease.
Right. And tenants law also has certain protections for the people signing those leases, for the renters themselves.
Oh, absolutely. That's why it's called landlord-tenant. It's not just tenant. It also protects the tenants and the landlords.
But it sounds like, just to be clear, you're saying that those tenants laws don't apply to someone who is squatting.
Right. In order to get into a landlord-tenant, you have to have a valid contract between two consenting parties, and that is governed by landlord-tenant law. You know, the whole notion that you leave for a two-week vacation and someone moves in unbeknownst, that, again, that could be burglary, breaking, and entering, a felony, can be trespass, misdemeanor. So, like, there are criminal protections for someone that is unauthorized. It doesn't have consent via contract. To enter your property. Apples and oranges, two different things that involves people that have a right through a contract to be on your property or people that are just breaking the law and entering your property.
There's also a danger for people who are entering and trying to inhabit vacant buildings, right? Like some of them are quite literally just structurally unsafe.
Oh, absolutely. They're dilapidated. They could be unsafe. And so from a safety standpoint, you're entering a building that, say, it is vacant. Say it's placarded by the city of Columbus. You don't know what's lurking inside the building. And I don't mean that from necessarily, you know, some sort of animal or creature. But I'm saying that from, like, is the roof safe? Are the flooring safe? Are the stairs safe? There's a reason why it was determined to be vacant and abandoned. And like I said, it is against the law to enter those buildings and occupy it. And when that does happen, typically, if it is, it's like it's a homeless individual or two seeking shelter. Our instinct is to obviously alert them that they're trespassing, getting them out, giving them a chance to leave, offering them services. And if they refuse to leave, then the criminal law kicks in.
Yeah, squatters usually are different from people who are homeless and seeking shelter. They come with their stuff a lot of times.
Yeah, and we try to be sensitive to folks that are homeless, that are seeking shelter in a vacant or abandoned structure. We give them an opportunity to leave. We want to provide them services. But again, if they refuse to leave, then, you know, they could be considered trying to squat in the property. And we have a whole host of criminal laws to hold them accountable.
So I sort of wonder, so this Leonel Moreno, again, no relation to Bernie Moreno, could he be charged at all for misstating the law when it comes to squatting here?
Oh, I mean, look, if
He's got other problems right now.
He has other problems, but look, you go on the internet, there's plenty of individuals who misstate the law and misstate the truth, some of whom run for president. I think if it was against the law to do that, you know, we'd be in a world of hurt as country. We do have First Amendment protections to say things, even if it does lead to an individual believing what is being said is true. I don't think there's any sort of repercussions for saying or misstating the law. It's just concerning that people don't do their own due diligence. They think what is being said is true. They follow it, and then they could find themselves in trouble. And that's what's really alarming here.
Especially if they've heard about the cases that have gone viral, say, in like Florida or California or New York, where the laws are just different.
Yeah, I mean, there's 50 states, 50 different set of laws when it relates to landlord-tenant. I can just unequivocally say that in Ohio, in Columbus specifically, this really is not a problem, and this is being pushed on right-wing social media and right-wing news outlets. I think to drive hysteria more than anything. It is 2024.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Do you have a story about a place you've leased or a story about a place you were trying to rent out? You can give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. I actually want to ask about a really strange thing that I came across in preparing for this episode. So it's people who get a lease, get keys, think they are legitimately renting a place. But they're not, because the landlord doesn't, the quote unquote, like, landlord doesn't own the property. And that's such a weird and interesting case. So it's almost like a squatter has taken it and then like leased it out to someone else.
Yeah, I'm unaware of those circumstances. I would say that's, you know, putting my law school back hat, my lawyer hat on. That's probably not a valid lease, because the landowner's obviously not consenting, as some sort of like dubious third party that's allowing for the consent. You know, in those situations, unfortunately, the individuals would be trespassing because they'd be in a structure that is not under a valid lease. And, you know, the way that if that ever came across my desk because it was a trespass and the CPD came to me, I would say, like, let's work with these folks, get them out as soon as possible. Don't go automatically to criminal prosecution because they were unwilling, you know, thinking they were tricked into living there.
It seems to be it was a particular problem after the housing crisis and the crash, where there was a lot of vacant homes. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like, I guess, people preyed upon those seeking shelter.
Well, you know, look, in a lot of ways, that's similar to what happened at Colonial Village, if you recall. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a woman that was not authorized by the management company to allow Haitian immigrants that were coming asylum seekers here locally. She was pocketing the money essentially and running off the books a fake census count, allowing them to live in these structures. And unfortunately, like the law did work. It's unfortunate for the Haitian individuals who were duped and tricked, thinking they were doing the right thing. But the law did work. We helped the Haitian immigrants. We're helping them get housing and making sure they have a social safety net that's protected, but it was against the law for them to be there. And I think that is evidence.
But you're not
of
charging them with criminal trespass.
Exactly, because they were there under dubious situations created by the rogue management company employee.
So I guess just final question. So squatting, in your opinion, is not a problem here in Columbus, and I guess what would you want people to know if they've seen this video, if they've seen these stories on other news outlets? Like, what should be the takeaway for Ohioans when it comes to squatting?
That your property is safe, that you should feel rest assured that no one is taking over your property and taking it from you in some sort of way that's being described on TikTok. That if someone enters your house, like, illegally, that could be breaking and entering, and they could be charged with a felony. And or they could be charged with trespass, and that the Division of Police deals with these issues accordingly. We prosecute, and the county prosecutor's office prosecutes these cases accordingly, and that folks should feel safe going on their 10-plus day vacation or even overnight down in Hocking Hills, that when they come back, that their property is going to be theirs.
Or even if, say, they have a parent die and it's going to take a couple months to get the house ready to process things to sell.
Oh, absolutely. They should be rest assured that they are going to be protected under the law.
That was Columbus City Attorney Zach Klein. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's always great to be on. I appreciate you.
Coming up, we're going to get the facts on Florida's new squatting law and how it attempts to delineate between the rights of tenants and those who illegally enter a home. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis just signed into law a so-called property rights bill intended to remove squatters more quickly. During the press conference, DeSantis said the bill also increases the penalties for those caught living in these homes.
Providing very swift remedies, because what the squatters know is even when they're in the wrong, it's a massive process many times before they can be evicted. And a lot of times the process is very expensive.
We're talking this hour about the issue of squatters' rights, tenants' rights, and separating fact from fiction. Joining us now to talk about the Florida law is Washington Post reporter Maria Luisa Paul, who wrote about the issue. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And also joining us is Dara Kam, a Tallahassee-based senior writer at the News Service of Florida. Welcome to All Sides.
It's a pleasure to be here.
She also hosts a political podcast called Deeper Dive with Dara. That sounds awesome.
It's a lot of fun. Join in.
So, Dara, Florida is one of at least four states to enact or consider this kind of legislation. Florida's new law takes effect this summer. What will it do when it takes effect, Dara?
Well, it will, as the governor said, make it easier for sheriffs to remove people who are living in someone else's home, squatters. The bill, in part, could lead to second-degree felony charges for squatters who intentionally cause at least $1,000 in damage. It could also lead to first-degree felony charges against people who sell or lease residential property they don't own. There's a process, it lays out a process for property owners to go through in order to get the sheriff to remove these folks.
And it was driven, at least in part, by some pretty viral homeowners who talked about problems with their own homes. Is that right, Maria?
Yes, absolutely. But that's the interesting thing, right? Because it's a handful of cases that have just exploded. And you have news outlets covering them just constantly. I mean, we're talking about news outlets that have posted 40 stories on squatting.
I think it's important, if I can jump in
here. Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, the governor, you played a clip from his press conference when he signed the law back in March. And during debate on this bill during the legislative session and at that press conference, he said that this has not happened in Florida. So we have zero cases of this right now in Florida. And, you know, it seems as if it's like a political kind of a football, as there are other issues. It is among the political issues that the legislature is kind of glommed onto, the Republican-controlled legislature, although it did get unanimous support in both the House and the Senate here in Florida. But, you know, apparently squatting is not a thing, but the governor did, as Maria pointed out while we were chatting beforehand, that the governor did, as he often does when he signs some of these law and order measures, he did say, you know, we're not going to be California and New York. So apparently squatting is a thing in California and New York, not a thing in Florida, but we have a law protecting us from it now.
Yeah, in California in particular, Maria, there's a guy who calls himself the Squatter Hunter, and he's made a lot of national news. I've seen him all over the place lately talking about how he will basically enter into a legal lease with the homeowner and then go in and basically out-squat the squatter, so to speak. But it's getting so much attention. I've seen him everywhere lately.
That was an interesting thing, too, because particularly with the bill in Florida that had been tried to pass before, there was one woman, Patty Peebles, who had a case of squatting in Florida, and she was one of the driving forces behind the bill, but then she wasn't invited to this bill signing. And she even, you know, she kind of mentioned this in some social media posts about how, you know, Florida and other politicians are kind of using this as this bogeyman and inviting people from California and other states, but not her.
So, Maria, you actually talked with a couple of national experts about how rare or prevalent squatting is. Who did you talk to and what did they say?
Yeah, so I'm going to back up here a little bit to like get to why we talked to these bunch of experts. We started seeing this huge explosion of social media posts, news stories, TV segments about squatting. And the suggestion was that this was, you know, this huge national crisis that was happening everywhere, especially in cities, and that something had to be done about it. It was also sort of like this idea that there were some squatters' rights and that people and immigrants even could come into your home, say that they had rights, and then suddenly they could take up and have ownership of it, which is not exactly how the law works. But the information was so murky, like even though they pointed out that this had increased, there were just no numbers to back it up. And that's why my colleague, Maham Javid, and I, we decided, oh, we have to do a deep dive about this and figure out like, what is the extent of this problem? Why are we talking about it so much? And I mean, is this something that politicians should take immediate action on? And so we talked to a bunch of experts. We reached out, for example, to Princeton's Eviction Lab, which does research on evictions. And what they told us was there's absolutely no proof that squatting is, you know, driving evictions. We talked to Eric Dunn, who is in the National Housing Law Project. And, you know, this is someone who started his career in Detroit, which has hundreds of abandoned homes. And he still said that he could count with one hand the number of legitimate squatting cases he had seen. I also spoke to Satish Nori, who is a housing lawyer in New York and a professor in NYU law. And he said the same thing. Like, he was in court when he called me and he said, there's no squatting cases right now.
It's kind of an example of what I've been doing this for a very, very long time. I call legislation by anecdote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what captures people's attention or hits their emotions so vividly is that there's this woman, I believe she's in Queens, but she's somewhere in New York City. And there's this very viral news story of her being arrested for changing the locks in her own home to try and get squatters out. And it's such a gut punch that I think it goes viral and it resonates with people.
I mean, it's not to discount the experience that these people have had, because it has to be absolutely frustrating to come to your home and see that there's someone there. And it has to be even more frustrating that you can't really do anything about it at the moment except go through court. But the idea that this is some sort of national crisis, that's a stretch. There's no proof of that.
So, Maria, Dara, I apologize. So, Dara, have you been able to find any kind of documentation on how often this happens in Florida?
No, in fact, our news we're a wire service, and all of the news outlets in Florida subscribe to us. Nearly all of them do. And we did not. We paid very little attention to this bill as it was moving through the process. So I can tell you that is when Maria just mentioned to me, there's a woman in Florida who this has been a problem for. I did not see her at the committee meetings, or I did not hear about her. I've read the staff analyses on the House and Senate bills. There's no mention of this happening. There's no data about the frequency of it, if there is a frequency of it. As I said, the governor himself said it's not a thing in Florida. We don't have this right now, but this is a way of, I think it's part of their law and order. We're not going to let this happen. And legislation by anecdote, we could spend hours talking about the kinds of bills that are passed that are combating some boogeyman that is created in the, and again, as Maria said, horrible situation to be locked out of your own home and find people there living, trashing the place. That nobody wants to see that. Nobody endorses that. There already are laws on the books about criminal trespass and transient occupancy. So there's a process that you can go through. This speeds up the process and creates this extra penalty for damages that are done, you know, felony. That's no laughing matter. Fear mongering about something that is not really taking place, it seems more like a politically motivated law than anything else.
So Maria, it sounds like there are anecdotes, definitely. I've seen them from like Washington State, California, New York, Florida, but there aren't really any hard numbers statistically on how often this is happening. But you also talked to a law professor who had some concerns about changing these laws that could have blowback against tenants. Can you kind of walk us through that?
Yeah. So you have to remember that how like the squatting process really goes. Like usually what happens is that if you find squatters in your property, you report it to the police. Then you have to send a letter basically telling them, please go. And if they don't vacate the property, then you go through the court system, which is frustrating, but there's a good reason for it. I mean, decades ago, something that was legal was what's called self-help eviction. So basically a property owner could go to their property with a gun and say, leave. The court process is there to prevent these instances of violence. But it's also there because, you know, there are cases where homeowners want to simply evict someone for maybe not a good reason. And so that's why you have to go through the court system where you have a judge who's well-versed in the law and he can make the decision based on the facts. And so that's how you have due process. But the problem with this law that Eric Dunn mentioned out was that you're kind of opening a can of worms where you're putting the issue in the hands of police who are not trained to do this. This is not their job responsibility. And suddenly they have to decide who owns the property. That's a question for a judge, he said. And another, like he pointed to an Arkansas law as an example of how these laws don't work, because Arkansas actually had a bill passed about homeowners being able to evict tenants if they did not pay their lease, I think even like for one day, and they made it a police matter that you could call the police and they could come and evict someone. And he said like that just didn't work and they stopped enforcing it because it had all sorts of issues. So you're opening up yourself to that situation as well.
This is really a question for either of you, which is how has the political climate with regard to immigration played a role in the passage of these laws, or has it at all?
Well, I mean, when you see, because we started tracking the mentions of squatters and squatting, and you see the peaks that coincide with different events. And one of the big peaks where people started posting about this, especially like politicians, was when there was a Venezuelan TikToker who, you know,
based here in
this-
Columbus.
Yes. And he posted this video basically saying, you can come to the United States and take over homes and whatever. Was that video very inflammatory and concerning that someone would post that? Yes. But is it a stretch to say that people are suddenly coming over to this country to take over homes? Yes. And this kind of reminds me of the whole situation with immigrants and crime that we've been hearing out a lot. You know, there was the really heartbreaking case in Georgia from with Lincoln Riley, who was killed by an immigrant. And, you know, politicians suddenly started hinging onto this case and kind of using it as a way to say, hey, all the immigrants are coming here for the border and they're killing people and doing crimes. But when you look at the data, immigrants are less likely to commit crimes than Americans.
I will say that the governor and the legislature has not out loud directly correlated immigration with this squatting law. However, I will add that immigration has been one of the major issues that DeSantis has latched onto since his election 5 years ago, and in his campaign for president. Florida currently has, state troopers, the State Guard members over in Texas to help with what the governor often refers to as the crisis at the border. Florida has sued the Biden administration, and I think I'm following maybe six lawsuits over its immigration policies. And so it is top of mind for the governor and the Republicans in the legislature. So recently, just our chief financial officer went to the border. So it is, you know, are they correlated? There's nothing out loud to connect them. There's no overt connection, but immigration and sort of the as Maria said, the many times false connection between immigration and crime is something that we see a lot of here in the Sunshine State.
And you even see it, I mean, even if it's like not necessarily correlated, you do still see like politicians grasp onto it. Like, for example, on Monday, there was a Republican senator in Minnesota who was trying to pass an amendment on squatting. And he basically said that immigration was the source of it, when there was kind of like no proof of this happening in Minnesota.
And I do want to be clear for those who saw the video of the Venezuelan man here in Columbus talking about it. He has been arrested and he is in jail in Geauga County here for failure to report to Immigration and Customs Enforcement in a timely manner. So he was picked up, seems like almost as a result of publicizing himself and where he was. So that was Maria Luisa Paul, a reporter for The Washington Post. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And thanks to Dara Kam, a Tallahassee-based senior writer at the News Service of Florida. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're talking with a law professor about property law. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staber. We're talking about property rights this hour, specifically how squatting has become a political talking point following viral videos by a Columbus area migrant. Felix Chang is a visiting professor of law at the Ohio State's Moritz College of Law, and he's also a professor of law at the University of Cincinnati, where he specializes in property law. Welcome to All Sides, Professor Chang.
Hi, Anne. It's really great to be here.
So squatters have always been an issue throughout the founding and growing of our country. But since COVID, it seems like there have been incidents that people have picked up and really run with. Can you sort of define what squatting is legally for us?
Yeah, sure. Zach talked a little bit about it. And squatting is basically where you have somebody who's staying on the premises of a property owner without their permission. I think that the legal definition isn't quite that concise. But in general, if you're a property owner, one of the core rights that you have, like kind of in the bucket of property rights, is the right to exclude people. So the way I think of squatting is it might fall into kind of two legal paradigms. The first is adverse possession. You talked about that a little bit with Zach already, where it's really difficult, where you have somebody who's been on property for long enough, you satisfied elements like open and notorious, it's adverse without permission and can be for a really long time, then you can get possessory rights. The other legal framework is kind of landlord-tenant relations. And you talked about that earlier when you were speaking with Maria and Dara. But in general, where that arises is maybe you have a contract for a leasehold for a period, and then the tenant stays over and becomes a holdover tenant. So those are kind of the two paradigms that I think about squatting arising under property law.
I want to take a quick call from Alan in Pickerington because he has a legal question. Welcome to All Sides, Alan.
Yes, for you and the professor. I understand the tenant part, but just as far as I think what we would consider stereotypical squatting, what's the difference between me as a homeowner going home right now and finding somebody in my house, calling the police on them, and the police would remove them and take them to jail? I don't see the difference between what we're calling, in air quotes, squatting, and that scenario. You know, for example, a homeowner now, today, I hate to even bring this up, has the right to defend their property and defend themselves. So what would stop someone from going to their house, finding somebody in their home, and perhaps using a firearm against that person?
Yeah, Alan, that's a really good question. So as a homeowner, you have that right to exclude. It's a core part of the property right that inheres in you holding property. So absolutely, you have the right to exclude trespassers. Now, it's kind of a slightly different fact pattern that we're talking about, where there are certain relations that might give some contractual rights. So if you might have, let's say, a holdover tenant, which you said you understand, so it's kind of a distinct setting, but if you've got a holdover tenant, they might have some contractual rights under the lease with the landlord. And when they stay over and become a holdover tenant, technically they're not allowed to be on the property anymore. And I guess you could call them a squatter, but you're absolutely right. In that setting, kind of the landlord's right to exclude is going to be circumscribed a little bit by common law and perhaps by the underlying contract. Great question.
Yeah, actually, that brings up, so in New York, which obviously is not the laws here in Ohio, and I want to be clear about that, but there is this news report of this woman in Queens who was arrested for changing the locks to her own home because she was trying to remove three people who were living there illegally. And she was arrested for unlawful eviction. Now, they have the people there, I guess, had been living there for several months. Okay. And she didn't know that. And like this was like a rental property. And when she discovered them, she tried to get them out. And it was complicated.
Right. So, you know, I looked that case up because I heard you talking about it. And that's the first time that I've encountered it. I mean, in thinking through it, if it's defensible at all, that scenario might have arisen because you've got people living there who might say that there's some sort of tenants. And if that is the case, then to prevent things like self-help, which your guest already talked about earlier, and kind of the situation devolving into chaos, if there is a landlord-tenant relationship, you're required to go through the legal process. And there is a process. You've got to go through the courts. You've got to initiate eviction proceedings. But the process for anybody who's been to eviction court, you know, the process is really streamlined. So I don't want to create the impression that it's really burdensome to evict people, even if you have a formal landlord-tenant relationship. Eviction proceedings can be really, really quick, really streamlined.
Can these laws also apply to a house guest or someone you've invited into your home temporarily, maybe a friend who you're helping out for a couple weeks, and then they just decide they're not going to leave?
No. I mean, if you invite somebody to your friend, you invite somebody over, you invite a house guest over, they're an invitee or a licensee. You know, it's not bound by any formal agreement. Oftentimes, landlord-tenant relations are going to be papered up. You've got a lease agreement. Here, you've got a license. You've extended somebody a license to maybe enter your premises for, you know, a narrow purpose or for a time limit, and then you revoke that license, and that's it. They're supposed to leave.
I also want to talk about another twist. When you're giving keys, like you're giving keys in a lease to a home that you're supposedly renting, but the person who leased it to you doesn't have the right to lease it. And I found this wildly fascinating
Okay.
because essentially you're squatting, but you don't know
Okay.
that you're squatting. Does that make sense?
No, most of these scenarios don't make sense. So I think the hypothetical is, all right, so somebody manages to get a set of keys to a home and they don't have a legal right to be there, but then they give the keys to somebody else. So in theory, that might be a subletter. So what rights and remedies might that create? I mean, kind of the necessary chain is there any legal right for that person who handed over the keys to be there to begin with? So, I mean, it, you know,
But I think the cops probably wouldn't arrest the family with the lease. It probably would end up in eviction court.
okay, so it probably would. I mean, you've got an innocent third party who is kind of duped. You've also got the landlord who was duped. And so I suppose in that wacky scenario, maybe you would have to go through an eviction proceeding. I guess the other thing that I'll say is, you know, usually landlord-tenant relationships are going to be papered up pretty well because landlords usually they'll have form agreements and they're actually, if you can imagine, a really powerful lobbying organization. So they're organized. There will be many instances in which landlord-tenant relationships are kind of informal. If you imagine kind of large households, and sometimes tenants may end up subleasing to others in kind of an informal arrangement. So theoretically, that might arise. You know, Matthew Desmond, who's done a lot of work on this, he was mentioned earlier. He's at the Eviction Lab at Princeton, but he's looked at kind of the informality of tenant
Oh,
subtenant relations.
subleasing, yeah. That
Right, that's
gets
right.
really complicated.
Yeah, I mean that slightly gets complicated, but I think the overarching picture is that much of the power still resides in the landlord. So I just wanted to be very clear about that.
Yeah. So I want to talk about this case out of California that I thought was completely wild. So there was a
Okay.
California doctor who rented his guest house to a woman on Airbnb, right? Like lots of people do, right? You might
Right.
rent out your accessory dwelling. And then it took 570 days to evict her. She just
Okay.
decided to stay, and it took almost 2 years to get her out of his unit.
Okay. So that sounds really, really strange to me.
Yeah, the LA Times did a whole write-up on it, and it was very bizarre. I think maybe they wrote about it because it was such an outlier.
I mean, that just seems really, really strange to me. It would seem like,
It
you
was
know,
happening during COVID, so I guess there was some like eviction moratorium restrictions.
So that's an important point. So I guess there are two points. So in addition to the remedies that you might have under eviction proceedings, you know, for short-term rentals, oftentimes it's going to be governed by local law. Like in Columbus, for instance, you have to register your short-term rental. You got to get a license. And there may have been some local laws governing short-term rentals. That said, I would think that the local laws would probably be more favorable toward the homeowner. I'm surprised that I don't know if Airbnb or Vrbo got involved. I would be surprised that they hadn't been involved. The other thing I would say is that, Anna, since you mentioned the eviction moratorium, it's really important to keep perspective that just a few years ago, we were really concerned about a wave of evictions that would happen with COVID. And look how quickly the tide has turned. So I just wanted to make sure that that was absolutely clear. Just a couple of years ago, we were all very sympathetic, you know, really sympathetic toward renters and tenants.
I want to take a call from Molly in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Anna. Hi, Professor Chen. I was just wondering, hearing your conversation, what these squatters' laws might do to influence tenants' powers to withhold rent as a means of enforcing the lease, making necessary repairs, that kind of thing. Because it seems to me in this conversation that we may be, like, it may be necessary to consider what does this do to the negotiating powers of right. those in the lease with the landlord,
right.
given the messiness of this situation.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Molly. You know, when I teach about landlord-tenant law, I tell students that it's never a good idea to withhold rent as a tenant if there are obligations that the landlord hasn't fulfilled. For instance, you know, if the implied warranty of habitability is violated because there's no functioning heat. In serious situations, you can put the rent into escrow. So I don't think it's really a good idea in general for tenants to withhold rent. So I just wanted to say that at the outset, but I think it's a really interesting question, which is what does this do to the negotiating position? I'm of the view that usually if there is like informational and power asymmetries between landlords and tenants, that it's going to be stacked in landlords' favor. And the reason is because thinking about landlords as property owners versus tenants as non-property owners, I would think that landlords tend to be kind of the interest that is probably wealthier and better organized. So that will be reflected in leases. That will be reflected through the courts. And so I don't really think this changes a whole lot in the power dynamics. We were talking about bargaining between landlords and tenants. It's a great question.
I also wanted to get your legal opinion on this guy who calls himself the Squatter Hunter.
Okay.
He's got a YouTube channel, and essentially what he does is if there is a squatter in a place that somebody wants out, he gets a lease, like a legal lease from the owner of the property, and then
okay.
he goes in and basically tries to out-squat the squatter. Like, he'll live in the property alongside them and film it for his YouTube channel, and make it so uncomfortable that they leave. And he's got about a dozen videos of himself doing this.
So this is a guy who's going alongside squatters. He gets a lease. He gets a lease for himself, and he's trying to outlast the squatters. And
yeah, you can hire him, basically, if you have a squatter problem. Give him a lease, and then he goes in and, like, tries to get them out by living there with them.
I just don't think that's necessary. Okay, so, again, going back to kind of the two paradigms that I think about this. One is landlord-tenant. We've talked exhaustively about landlord-tenant. So you've got the legal remedies to get people out. You have a legal right to exclude. You can call the police. Now, if you're talking about truly adverse possession, which is somebody trying to, you know, live long enough in the homeowner's premises, or it might be land, and it lasts for truly long enough, I mean, I would say after it's 21 years, I would say after like a year, if you haven't dealt with this squatter, you know, it's kind of caveat emptor. It's kind of like, why didn't you take action? So it's just the all of these hypotheticals are just really mystifying to me.
Yeah, you should check them out sometimes. The videos are kind of wild, but I guess that's his shtick.
Okay.
We had an email from Marie who wanted to know, what are her legal options in a situation with a boyfriend who refuses to leave? Like, not on the lease, essentially squatting
okay.
in the house.
Yeah, so a boyfriend who refuses to leave, if Marie is the you know, if she's a tenant of record, I mean, one thing you could do oftentimes in leases, it will stipulate who is allowed to live there, who's allowed to be on the premises. And then that gives Marie then a basis to tell the landlord, you know, you've got somebody here who has no legal right to be here. So, I mean, there are many options, but that might be something that is not as much self-help, I would think.
Yeah. I kind of wonder, can you, as the leaseholder, break the lease and move out and then leave, like, be like, you can stay behind, but like, I've left.
So the leaseholder has left, and contractually the leaseholder, you know, the tenant is still obligated to pay on the lease. And so unless it's been formally assigned to another party where the original tenant is relieved of liability, that would not be a good idea.
Oh, that's good to know. Why do you think squatting has become such a cultural touchstone at the moment?
So I would say at the outset that your guests have all said this is not a real issue. So this is probably something that's been politicized. So let's think about it in a couple of different dimensions. So let's kind of reverse the parties or go back 10 years during the financial crisis. If you had homeowners who maybe had lost their homes, they got foreclosed upon, the homes were possessed by the bank, the home was boarded up, maybe the former homeowners who've now been evicted move in, where would your sympathies lie? I would guess that most of our sympathies would probably lie with, you know, the formerly evicted homeowners who now do not have a legal right to be on the homes anymore that have been foreclosed. So I think my guess is it's kind of been politicized, which is really unfortunate. I think the bigger picture is still thinking about which camp is the interest that has better political representation, landlords or tenants? I would think landlords. What I'm really worried about is this discourse making it so that it's going to be easier to evict tenants when we've worked really hard to get them protections, especially after the financial crisis. The other thing that I'll say is that some of the laws around, so landlord tenants we've talked about, so adverse possession, and again, it's for a really long time. It's for like between 10 and 20 years. There's a lot that you
I really hate to cut you off, but we are unfortunately out of time. Thank you so much, Felix.